And once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, wherever else you're tuned in to this broadcast tonight. My name's the V-Man, and tonight, more on the case of Kevin Cooper, scheduled to be executed by the state of California in just under a week on February 10th at the stroke of midnight. Kevin is set to be pumped full of lethal chemicals to take his life. Last night, February 3rd, 2004, was a statewide day of action to save Kevin Cooper's life and stop the execution. We'll bring you coverage of an event here in Santa Cruz, which featured Angela Davis. We won't be getting to her talk tonight on Rockin' the Boat, but we'll be hearing from the other panelists, and we're going to get started right away here with Jason Padawan, a student with the Campaign to End the Death Penalty. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat, coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good evening. In 1 week, there will be a crime committed in the state of California. The perpetrators of this crime will not go to jail. They will not even go to trial. If the course of events goes their way, this miscarriage of justice will not be labeled a crime, or for that matter, a murder. It will be called American justice. Of course, the crime that I'm speaking of is a planned execution of this man, Kevin Cooper. On June 4th, 1983, four members of the Ryan family were killed in their home outside Los Angeles. There was only one survivor of the attack, 8-year-old Joshua Ryan. Several weeks after the murders, Kevin, who had recently escaped from a minimum security prison and was hiding in an abandoned house near the Ryan's home, was arrested. In 1985, Kevin was convicted of the quadruple murder and was sentenced to death. Now, we are told, supposedly, that in order to send someone to their death in this country, it is the responsibility of the courts to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The case against Kevin does not even come close to meeting that criterion. In fact, it is full of contradicting testimony, untested evidence, and police and prosecutorial misconduct. Just to describe some of the more telling, contradicting evidence, I mentioned that sole survivor of the attacks, Joshua Ryan. Well, he told police and family members that it was not one man who committed the crime, but in fact, there were multiple assailants, and that they were not African American, that they were either white or Latino. And indeed, there were three murder weapons. At one point in the trial, the authorities learned that a prisoner had related to his cellmate, this prisoner's name was Kenneth Kuhn, had related to his cellmate that he and two other men had committed the crime. The evidence of this confession was never shown to a jury. A pair of bloody overalls was submitted to the police by a local woman named Diane Roper. The overalls belonged to who was then her boyfriend. The police simply discarded these overalls. In addition, a t-shirt was found near the crime scene that has spots of blood on it. The same woman, Diane Roper, had stated that she had bought just such a t-shirt for her boyfriend. Again, this was never told to the jury. Unexplainable blonde and brown hair was found in the victim's hands, hair that clearly could not have been linked to Kevin. This evidence was never brought before a jury. In the stolen car, supposedly, cigarette butts were found that contained DNA linked to Kevin. However, initial inspections of the car did not reveal these cigarette butts. In fact, initial photographs of the car did not show any cigarette butts. There had been cigarette butts in the abandoned house in which Kevin was staying, is entirely possible that the police took these cigarette butts and planted them in the car later on. And furthermore, the prosecution could not come up with a motive for the crime. It was left up to the judge to make up the motive. And the motive that he came up with was, well, he wanted to steal the car, so he killed the entire family. Which, in my opinion, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So now, to me, this doesn't sound like the case against Kevin is solid beyond a reasonable doubt. In fact, the case seems just plain lousy. In all likelihood, Kevin is an innocent man. If anything, he is guilty of being poor, of being black, and of being an easy target. There are a number of reasons why we are taking up the fight for Kevin's life. The first, I think, is the most obvious, that the killing of this man would be both an injustice and an irreversible tragedy, that this individual will cease to think, to breathe, to feel, due to the capriciousness of the criminal justice system, is unthinkable. The second reason is less moral and more political. As Kevin said, his execution will be a crime against humanity. I think he's right. This case goes beyond the life of one person because it embodies everything that is profoundly wrong with the machinery of death, known as capital punishment. If Kevin is to die, we must guarantee that his death is not in vain. He must become a symbol for why this legal form of lynching must be done away with. And the way we can start is by making so much noise this next week that we force the governor to come before all Californians and say, I am granting clemency, or I am going to kill a black man during Black History Month because I do not care about the facts. We need to let Governor Schwarzenegger pay for his actions. And if he does, we will be that much closer to abolishing this injustice and guaranteeing that no one lived the nightmare that Kevin is living ever again. Thank you.
I'm calling from death row, San Quentin Prison.
Please help save Kevin Cooper. No, help free Kevin Cooper.
One day, I believe truth will come up. And if the truth comes up, then at the least I can get a new trial. That's all I'm asking for is a new trial.
Kevin Cooper has been given a date to die. On February 10th, 2004, state of California plans to kill him by pumping him full of poison.
Call or email Governor Schwarzenegger at 916-445-2841. That's 916 area code 445-2841. Email governor@governor.ca.gov. That's governor@governor.ca.gov.
That's all I'm asking for is a new trial.
www.savekevincooper.org. Phone number 510-895-0332.
You're tuned to Rockin' the Boat on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101 FM, www.freakradio.org. That was a PSA produced by Free Radio Santa Cruz producer Skidmark Bob. And we heard just before that from Jason Paduan, a student with Campaign to End the Death Penalty, a UCSC student. Up next, we bring you Paul Ortiz, professor of community studies at UC Santa Cruz, who spoke at the event at Merrill College, UC Santa Cruz, last night, the statewide day of action to save Kevin Cooper's life.
When I think of Kevin Cooper, I think of an individual who in his life trajectory, where he started from, where he is now, where he is going to, what he has taught us, his attempts to educate us about the dehumanization of the prison industrial complex. I think of an individual who, in my mind, is one of the most remarkable individuals in modern American history. And what I'm concerned with is that Kevin Cooper not become an icon of the moment. I'm concerned that Kevin Cooper not become just a kind of a poster person for a political cause or political ideology, but that when we think of Kevin Cooper, we pay honor to the witness that he is bearing for all of us. That means, if we listen carefully to his words, this means that we must become active in the movement to abolish the death penalty. Now, I was asked this evening to talk about the topic of state-sponsored murder, capital punishment being a part of state-sponsored murder, warfare being another part, a constituent part of state-sponsored murder, genocide of Native Americans in the United States being another aspect of state-sponsored murder, slavery being another aspect of state-sponsored murder. But I also want to talk about ways in which we're seeing a new kind of death penalty abolitionist movement coming out of different points in the society, different places. And if you look at who's sponsoring the event tonight, who is co-sponsoring it, I think you get a sense of this newly revived movement for the abolition of the death penalty. Because if you are opposed to state-sponsored murder, you have to be opposed to the death penalty. There's just no other way around this. I want to throw out just a few statistics. Now, there's some wonderful tables in the back that have really important information all along the walls here that I really encourage you to take a look at. And you'll hear a lot of statistics, probably my colleagues will talk about some of these as well, but there's a few statistics that really come to mind when we're thinking about the death penalty, or at least to me, as I learn more about this topic. According to the American Civil Liberties Union, or the ACLU, in the past 30 years, 112 inmates were found to be innocent and released from death row, 112 individuals, human beings. Furthermore, according to the ACLU, over 80% of capital cases involve white victims, even though nationally only 50% of murder victims are white. In other words, according to Amnesty International, 80% of the more than 800 people executed in the USA since 1977 were convicted of crimes involving white victims, yet blacks and whites are the victims of murder in almost equal numbers in the USA. So immediately there, you have the racial disparity. And I'd asked Martin I'd only made 50 copies of this Bureau of Justice statistic sheet, which shows the remarkable racial disparity of prisoners on death row. And I think that might be circulating in the back. But furthermore, according to the ACLU, the quality of legal representation is a better predictor of whether or not someone will be sentenced to death than the facts of the crime. So think about this for a moment. The quality of legal representation is a better predictor of whether or not someone will be sentenced to death than the facts of the crime. This has been true throughout the entire span of American history. From the time of slavery, it mattered more who you were. It mattered your race, your class, your gender, your ethnicity, more than the facts of the crime. And that continues to this very day. Finally, point in case, in Illinois, on the eve of Governor Ryan's commutation of 167 death row inmates, 33 of these death row inmates were represented at trial by an attorney who had later been disbarred or at some point suspended from practicing law. So the quality of representation, again, who you are, not the crime itself, but who you are has been a real critical part of the whole equation. But moving now towards what I see as a really critical juncture in the history of the struggle to abolish the death penalty. And here, I think there's some cause for optimism. First, more and more people question the implementation and even the utility of the death penalty from a very wide range of perspectives. Now, this is very important. The public support for the death penalty throughout American history kind of waxes and wanes. In some ways, it's surprising that it's beginning to wane a little bit, but it is. If you look at polling data, I'm not going to go over that data, but just to say that we're beginning to see people from across different political perspectives questioning the death penalty. Again, Governor Ryan in Illinois, he starts his term as a law and order Republican who ends his term commuting 167 cases on death row. Second, the restorative justice movement is gaining steam. This is very important. These are individuals, family members whose loved ones were victims of capital crimes, especially murder. This movement is important because it repudiates the idea that murder demands murder to avenge murder. These are individuals whose family members were killed. I mean, people like Mamie Till before she died last year, the mother of Emmett Till, who was lynched in Mississippi. She was a member of an organization called Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation. This gives lie to the notion that there has to be a murder to avenge a murder. So increasing numbers of people active in this movement. Increasing numbers of nations abolishing the death penalty or in a sense de facto removing it from their legal system. According to Amnesty International, 112 countries have abolished the death penalty in law practice. 83 other countries retain the death penalty, but the number of countries which actually execute prisoners in any one year is much smaller. Number four, there are an increasing number of really amazing research projects devoted to educating the public about the death penalty. One is Death Penalty Focus, the ACLU, the Center for Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University, which played a critical role in that struggle in Illinois. Finally, I want to talk just real 1 or 2 minutes about what Governor Ryan did in Illinois last year. This was a quite, this is a world historical event in some ways. Ryan commuted these sentences, but in a sense, he did more than commute the sentences because he raised issues of institutional racism within the prison industrial complex in a way that in some ways was much more compelling than anything I've seen, at least from people in positions of power. That is, he directly challenged people to make the claim that the death penalty could ever be implemented fairly. And he did this in a very long address. But all of these facts put together, in a sense, all of these different streams of hope or different streams of organization mean little unless we as individuals increase the base of organizing to abolish the death penalty. We, the people in this room, have got to do this. There has to be an action component. This can't just be kind of an educational forum. To quote directly from Kevin Cooper, "I am an activist and abolitionist, and my work speaks to this. I know that the death penalty is not only about me, Kevin Cooper, but is much, much bigger. In my mind and through my eyes, this is about a system that has historically and systematically executed men, women, and children who look just like me, whether from the standpoint of the color of their skin or from the standpoint of their class and background. I am part of the machine that we are building to put an end to this crime against humanity that this government uses. I am no more and no less than that." That is who Kevin Cooper is. And so to pay honor to who he is and the witness that he bears, we have to become active in this movement to abolish the death penalty. And I wanted to conclude. I was asked by the folks at Death Penalty Focus to announce an event that will occur on Monday, February 9th, 8 p.m. until just after midnight at the town clock in Santa Cruz for the scheduled execution of Kevin Cooper, if that should happen. It will be canceled if he is granted a stay. It's sponsored by Death Penalty Focus. There's some yellow little handouts in the very back. You can get more information for that. Thank you very much.
Rocking the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. That was Professor Paul Ortiz, Professor of Community Studies at UC Santa Cruz. He spoke last night at UCSC's Merrill College at the event to save Kevin Cooper, stop the execution, and abolish the death penalty. Angela Davis also spoke. We're going to be getting to her talk tomorrow. But finally tonight, we bring you George Lipsitz, Professor of American Studies at UC Santa Cruz. He also spoke last night at the event, and here is his comments now.
Well, it's a sad occasion that brings us here tonight, but it's not sad to engage in deliberative talk and face-to-face decision-making when we're faced with a matter of this kind of urgency. We need to hear from each other tonight what we'll never hear from the calculated cruelty of the corporate media or from the prattle that dominates the political process. We need to hear that most of the nations of the world have outlawed the death penalty because they consider it savage, barbaric, but also a punishment that undermines respect for the law. We need to hear that most of the world's religious leaders oppose the death penalty precisely because, rather than in spite of the fact, that they seek to teach that murder is wrong. We need to hear from each other that the death penalty is not a deterrent to murder, that the murderers of whites are 400 times more likely to get the death penalty than the murderers of blacks, that the state of Missouri shows pornographic movies to the general prison population on the night that an execution takes place, and that on the eve of the first woman's execution in the state of North Carolina, inmates were encouraged by the warden to masturbate. We need to say to each other that one of the most important organizations advocating for abolition of the death penalty is Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation, a group whose arguments against vengeance and retribution get drowned out by the cynical and cruel encouragement that politicians and journalists give to families of murder victims, telling them that one more murder will assuage the pain of their loss and put their minds at rest. We need to note here tonight that in the 1992 case of Keeney versus Tamayo Royer and the 1993 case of Herrera v. Collins, the Supreme Court declared that innocence of the crime committed is not an adequate reason to stop an execution of the defendant if the defendant received a trial that did not violate the Constitution. And we need to note, as Peter Linebaugh does, that those opinions were not delivered with sorrow, but in what he calls the neurotic hauteur of Chief Justice Rehnquist and the lurid snarl of Antonin Scalia. Most grievously, we need to be aware that by transforming the debate about the planned execution of Kevin Cooper into a silly referendum on whether murder is a bad thing, we avoid looking into the doubts in the minds of the jurors who convicted him. We avoid thinking about the equal grief of the families of the vast majority of murder victims whose perpetrators do not receive the death penalty. We prevent ourselves from considering other punishments that are meted out all around the world. And most seriously, in my mind, we insulate this one execution from the broader cultural and political matrix in which it takes place. Because the celebratory vengeance demanded by the self-proclaimed defenders of law and order who want the state to murder Kevin Cooper offer us something macabre and bizarre and inhuman and immoral. An execution without solemnity, without sadness, without sorrow. An execution that will take place in a context where the most significant and powerful institutions in our society now revolve around systematic, sensational, spectacular, and sadistic representations of real deaths, From the celebration of smart bombs by not-so-smart politicians and journalists, to the sadism in search of a story that propels the demonization and incarceration of inner-city youths, from the recreational hate that permeates popular entertainment and campus humor magazines, to the hate, hurt, and fear stoked by leaders who could not lead us into war, so they lied us into it. These performances of power have specific cultural causes and consequences. They make the lust of the spectator more important than our responsibilities as citizens. They alienate us from one another by substituting the pleasures of calculated cruelty for the satisfactions of social membership based on conviction and purpose. And in an age of inequality, exploitation, plutocracy, and plunder, capital punishment functions as a node in a network of our collective punishment by capital, a display of supreme power by the state against defenseless victims in order to stun us into silence through shock and awe. They perform not only a spectacular public execution, but executions attempt to recruit and implicate us in a specifically capitalist vision of who humans are and what individuals owe to one another. We're told now that the state that can go to war or can go to Mars, the war planet, but is too broke to feed the hungry, to house the homeless, or help the disabled, can be trusted with the ultimate decisions of life and death. More than a half century ago, facing another version of the same way of thinking that propels the projects of the most powerful forces in our society, Walter Benjamin noted that human self-alienation had reached the point where people can now experience their own destruction as an aesthetic pleasure of the first order. And in the celebrations of violence overseas at war, in the moral panic over terrorism, in the public spectacle of execution, we are being offered this aesthetic experience of experiencing our own destruction as aesthetic pleasure. And of course, we're here tonight to refuse that purported pleasure, to embrace the painfully difficult work of moving society along another course. We seek to save the life of Kevin Cooper. And of course, as Ella Baker used to say years ago, it's always easier to defend the town doctor than it is to defend the town drunk, but both deserve justice. And they deserve the same kind of justice that convicted felons like John Poindexter and Oliver North and Elliot Abrams have gotten from the criminal justice system. We seek to save the life of Kevin Cooper, but we also seek to augment and enhance the lives of his very executioners by saving them from the course on which they're embarked. In a society suffused with hate, hurt, and fear, the death penalty comes to take on a kind of normative logic. People who have been hurt want to hurt. People who are filled with fear want to make others fearful. But we're not going to hurt or fear, and we're not going to hate. We're here tonight to educate, to communicate, to agitate. The state intends to execute Kevin Cooper at 1 minute after midnight on February 10th. That midnight is part of an overdetermined pattern, because it's also midnight right now in the cultural order, the economic order, the psychological order, and the moral order of our society. But our ancestors knew that the darkest hour of midnight can also be the first moment of our victory, that we stand in this life at midnight and always on the verge of a new dawn.
George Lipsitz, professor of American Studies at the University of California, Santa Cruz, speaking last night, February 3rd, 2004, at an event in accordance with the statewide Day of Action to stop the execution and save the life of Kevin Cooper, a man on death row scheduled to be executed on February 10th by the state of California. And that's going to wrap it up for Rockin' the Boat. Angela Davis also spoke at that event. We'll be hearing from her tomorrow night on the program. Tune in again from 5:30 to 6 p.m. right here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 101 FM, or www.freakradio.org. My name is Avi Mann. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening.